the fire made that up, but by the devil we return. Insanity or glory in a mind that never learns. A moment of something where the dark can reverse. Tell the lonely where to go. Kill it inside and let it burn. It's not the only will I hold. Kill it inside and let it burn.
Welcome to In Plain Sight, Jeremy from Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash the donate, send the fundage, keep free speech alive for your children and grandchildren. Make your checks or money order payable to RBN, send it to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. You can call in your debit or credit card number. And you can also pay through PayPal and donate. Everybody donate $5, $10, everybody listening on the archives or live, and you will make the difference. This is our Tuesday night broadcast coming back after the long weekend. And I want to send out the bat signal. You know who I've got tonight.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Analyzing politics and fighting crime. He's kind of a big deal. Patrick Slattery, how was your weekend?
What weekend? When you're analyzing politics and fighting crime every day, there's no time for a weekend.
Were you analyzing and fighting crime with sparklers in hand and spatula in hand over your grill? You're not that kind of boomer, are you?
I'm not that kind of boomer. Sorry.
Yeah, you're one of us. I think I should make you an honorary Gen Xer.
It could happen. Yeah.
So we've got a lot on our plate. I mean, there's Ukraine, monkeypox, mass shootings, gun control, abortions, racial police shootings. There's the 2024 election. I think this thing in Akron, Ohio is probably maybe at the top of the list. What do you think? You want to go with that one?
Unfortunately, Mark Collett and I talked about it yesterday, and I didn't have full information. So from what you sent me, it seems as if this white kid who got stomped to death, that he and his friends actually had provoked a fight.
Yeah, so just a little bit of continuity. So the teenager that was stomped to death, now I think this actually happened earlier in the year. And this was at a high school in Akron. And the headline comes up because these three blacks that were that did the violence to this white teenager, their bond was set for $1 million. You were going to say something?
Yeah, and I don't think it was a high school. I think it was a school that was started by basketball star LeBron James, who is from Akron, Ohio.
The parking lot of the First Promise School. Now, yeah. the boy that was killed was a high school aged young man. So I think that's really what I meant there. Anyway,
maybe it was a high school. Maybe it was. My understanding was actually an elementary school, but you know, it would have had, if LeBron James was involved, it would have had a nice basketball court, I would assume.
Right. So, anyway, the three blacks accused of beating him have a bond set of $1 million, $1 million apiece. And the young white teenager that was murdered is Ethan Liming. Now, there was some kind of tomfoolery, or as we Irish would say, shenanigans going on, where Ethan Liming, the white boy, and some of his friends were shooting some sort of not actual weapons. There's like water guns. Let me see what this is.
Paintballs.
Yeah, paintballs. That's what it was. So splat R ball gun. So that's a type of paint gun at some individuals on the basketball court who were black. And it's unclear if Liming, the murdered teen, himself fired the gun. But for some reason, out of all the teens that were firing paintball guns, Liming was attacked and beaten to death. Now, let's stop right there. Now, we're going to get to the the police shooting and the protests and all that, but I'm sort of wanting to build some continuity of all the racial tension in Akron that sort of culminated in this black getting shot. But, I mean, you know, we did all of this type of stuff as kids. We shot bottle rockets at each other, you know, at 16 and 17. And, I mean, if you got mad at someone, you know, you duked it out. You had a good old-fashioned fist fight. Maybe you broke a nose. You know, you definitely, blocked an eye. And then it was settled. So I don't see any justification in beating this young man to death over paintball guns.
Well, it's not a question of whether there's ultimately the court case will be whether there's justification for it or not. There's still some information we need to know. Like when I read about this on the Stormer, and I might not have read it completely, there wasn't a whole lot of information other than the guy got stomped to death and had a boot print or a footprint on his chest when he died, and also that the blacks stole his car so that his friends couldn't even take him to the hospital, which probably wouldn't have mattered because he already had a broken neck. In terms of analyzing it for the racial aspect of what's going on, it's not a matter of whether a beating to that extent is obviously not justified, and it's not justified under the law. I mean, I know when we from martial arts being told, okay, if you get in this position, if you're attacked and you fight back this far, you've got to stop, because otherwise, depending on the state, otherwise if let's just say somebody attacks you physically, but and you've gotten to the point where they're on the ground, if you continue to fight them in a state like Virginia, for instance, then you become the criminal. If you go beyond a certain amount of self-defense, you become a criminal. And if you wind up beating somebody to death to that extent, that's, I would think, in any state, that's going to be crossing the line. But the thing is, when you or I had these kind of jinks with neighboring kids or whatever, they were people we knew, probably, yeah. Right? I mean, you weren't just going up to complete strangers in a different neighborhood and shooting off bottle rockets. So, did these people know each other or not? It's possible that it could go either way. If they went in and started shooting paint guns at blacks that they didn't know, then that's certainly asking for trouble. I don't know. That would be going to basically just trying to provoke a fight.
We can't assume anything. I didn't see anything in the article that they knew each other.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would tend to think they did. I would tend to think they did, but I can't say. So let's just throw that out of the equation.
Yeah. But I mean, partly I'm trying to roll back a few of the things that Mark and I were talking about, because my assumption was that the white kid had been beaten to death and it probably didn't provoke the fight. But if he provoked the fight, still, even if he provoked the fight, here's the comparison that's ultimately going to need to be made. And at Charlottesville, you had that DeAndre Harris, who clearly provoked a fight violently, with whites, and then you've got the three whites who are in prison now, and they're going to be in prison for 8 years. Jacob Goodwin's one of them, and you know we know exactly what happened because there was plenty of video, and they after DeAndre Harris attacked a 60-something-year-old white man, then he got DeAndre Harris was punched a few times, fell to the ground. He might have received one kick, not a stomp, but a kick. And I think the kick and the stomp, these are important aspects of this. There was like, I guess, three whites who were defending this older man. And one of them called off the self-defense countermeasures, it off and let DeAndre run away. And that's basically very white. Where you don't kick somebody when they're down, right? You don't. That's a white saying. Don't kick a man when he's down. So he was down. He might have received a kick or two, but he was called off. The black thing to do, and you see this in video after video. You see it with girls, is when somebody's down, you don't kick them. You stomp them. You stomp them, and that's a very black thing.
So regardless of whether they knew each other or not, I would tend to think they did know each other, but let's just throw that out of the equation. These three black men that stomped this white teenager, I mean, there was a point, even if you're not trained in martial arts, I mean, there's a point where you're like, enough's enough, and humanity should take over and be like, well, this guy's down and he's bleeding. You know, we got him back for shooting us with paintballs. You know, let's run away or something. But that's not that wasn't the case. He was stomped to death and caved his chest in, actually, along with the broken neck. So, I mean, it's very clearly they meant to F this guy up, as they would say. And then Chief Milet, the chief of police that we'll talk about later in the shooting of the black by the police officers in Ankrum, Chief Milet made the statement, there is nothing to indicate that race played a role in this homicide. He wanted to get that out there. So if it would have been a black kid, they would have stomped him just the same. I mean, well, you know, I don't know. Where's the lie there? Look at Chicago, you know, black on black violence.
They may have.
But I mean, you know, I think black or white, you know, when certain gangster types of the black race decide that they're going to F somebody up, I mean, it's on, regardless of their color. I'll give them that. But to say that race was no indicator, no played no role, I mean, that's a bit much to say that right off the bat before the investigation, even, before all of the findings came out. So here we're building the narrative of racial tensions in this town. Because this happened on June 2nd. That's what the article says. And I pulled my article from Cleveland 19 News, Cleveland, Ohio. I did see it in the Stormer, but I wanted to pull this other article to get a more objective point of view. Because Anglin is, you know, is Anglin. Right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think everyone can concede just from the facts that these, you know, three black young men intended to cause at least debilitating harm to this white boy, and maybe even intended on killing him. I mean, heat of the moment, you know, adrenaline, gangster rap in your mind, you know, about popping caps and killing people. I mean, you know, it's a perfect storm for this sort of thing. And it's a testimony to the degradation of black culture since the 1960s civil rights movement. You wouldn't see this a lot before the 60s, I don't think. You would not see this type of thing because of the fear of backlash, right?
There are two things going on here. One is cultural. The other is really, I think, genetic. I do think that that blacks are more excitable. And I saw on America's Funniest Home Videos once, you know, is that Pat Sajak? Not Pat, is that Pat Sajak? Bob Saget.
Yeah, it's the dude from Full House that got killed in an apartment, in a hotel.
I think it was his show. And they're showing the videos, and one was Halloween. Halloween hijinks, trick-or-treat. So you had the people in the video seemed to be mostly teenagers or going up, knocking on the door. And, you know, there was pumpkins around, and, you know, there was like a scarecrow or a zombie or something that was just sitting, it looked like a dummy. And then all of a sudden the zombie gets up and the people are so surprised that they run off, and it's funny. And then, you know, another set of people comes up and the same thing happens. And then there's a couple more people come up, and one of them was a black man, you know, a black teen. And the scarecrow gets up, and the teen just immediately punches him in the face, and then says, "Oh, I'm sorry, you startled me." But you know, that was the split second reaction. You had like three or four or five white teens, and their split second reaction was to jump back, and the blacks' split second. Now, this isn't obviously, it's not a statistically significant sample and random sampling and all of this, but you know, this, I think this, there is a difference in instinctive propensity to violence, you know, and when you are like attacked all of a sudden, your instincts come more into play. And so I think that's part of it. But you know, you mentioned that a while back, well, these kids probably would have had fathers. Their fathers probably took them out to the woodshed, and some of these instincts were probably held in check by A, by the father, and then B, by the knowledge that you know, if they were to get out of hand, then white dominated society was going to step in.
Yeah, and I mean, and we're talking about group behavior, of course, not individual blacks that you know, not the cool black guy that runs the barbecue shop in my small town. I mean, I couldn't picture any of those blacks in that barbecue shop doing anything like this. But the neighborhood right behind them, you know, blacks shoot each other over a dime bag of marijuana. So, you know, you've got that group behavior that we're actually talking about, just to clarify for the audience.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about tendencies, and you can be in a group with a tendency, but you don't have that tendency yourself. You know, that right. Tendency that only might affect 30%. It might not affect the majority, but if 30% are have kind of a hyper violent tendency, they're going to get their neighborhood is going to get one result, and if the other neighborhood, the white neighborhood, only like 5% or less have that hyper violent tendency, then you're going to get much different results.
Yeah, just like you have group behavior of lower working class whites in, you know, Kentucky or Tennessee that do meth and beat their girlfriends up. I mean, that's a group behavior that's kind of developed in the last 30 years. But there's those of us in that lower working class group that would just, you know, take on another job and not do meth, maybe just pour another martini and just work more jobs to, you know, get out their angst or work out on a punching bag. You know, so you have group behavior in every race. Let's take this break and come back on the other side and keep building this narrative of racial tensions in Akron.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
We're back to the show, the Patrick and Jeremy show, big shoe, talking about Anchorage, Ohio. So we covered this murder of Ethan Lyming, June 2nd. And then National Justice Party, the guys over at TRS, rushstuff.biz, did a protest there and, you know, protesting the death of Ethan Lyming as a racial murder. And then here you have, just over the weekend, this other article I sent you of a black suspect. Let's see. Yeah. A black guy, they were pulling him over at a traffic stop, and he fired rounds out of his car, stopped after they chased him, got out of the car and ran, and they shot him down using like 60 rounds. And so this is becoming a whole George Floyd 2.0. The article was posted July 5th, so this is just heels on the heels of the Ethan Lyming murder. Akron, Ohio, a police expert and former police officer is raising questions about officer training and whether lethal force was necessary in the shooting of Jaylen Walker. So Were you familiar with this incident, Patrick? Did you get to read this?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, they released this body cam video, and there were so many officers involved that I think there was about 13 different angles of the same thing. I got through maybe 10 angles, and then it got a little bit repetitive. But
one of them a black officer, by the way.
Okay, yeah, and that wasn't clear. They were blurring to a large extent because the cam started and many of the officers were driving vehicles, and you could see the arms on the from the body cams while they were driving in pursuit of this person. And in many cases, although not in all cases, they blurred the officers' arms, which I assume meant they had identifying tattoos on their arms or something like that. The arms that weren't blurred out seemed not to have tattoos. So, I don't know how many of the officers were black. The voices that you heard from the officers didn't seem to be black. But, you know, if there was 13 body cams, there was, I think there were there eight officers who discharged the weapons?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, clearly, you know, you had somebody who was being pulled over for good reason. I don't whether it's a traffic violation or a equipment, you know, the taillight out, being pulled over and then initiated a chase. And then during the chase, seems to have fired out of his car at the police chasing him, pursuing him, and then crashed and ran out the passenger side of his car. And while he was running, it's a little bit unclear without using, pause buttons, but apparently turned around. The police thought he was going to shoot again, and so they just discharged the weapons into him. It was a case of what was the term Anglin used? Something like trial by pursuit,
trial by combat.
Trial by combat. Okay, trial by combat. And this is certainly much more egregious than what the young white man in the young, 17-year-old kid in the parking lot basketball court did. Are the blacks going to come out? And it's interesting. Okay, so the National Justice Party is doing something in Akron. Because I'll tell you what's really egregious, and this wasn't in the prep, but I believe it was in Maryland, you had a four-year-old white girl who had wet her pants, and her white aunt's black boyfriend, who was around at the time, wound up beating her to death over it. And
yep. Interestingly enough, we don't hear about that at all.
No, you don't hear about that. You don't hear about that. And, you know, obviously if the roles, the races had been reversed, you know, you'd be hearing about it nonstop. This type of stuff where whites are being egregiously attacked and murdered by blacks happens all the time. It only makes local news. Doesn't get national news, so it doesn't get that massive amplification, and it doesn't go on news cycle after news cycle the way St. George Floyd.
Yeah, let's get back to this on the other side. I got a little bit more on this piece of prep, and then we'll go to our caller.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is really is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Okay, you're back. To the Patrick and Jeremy Show on your Tuesday night broadcast, just talking about this Akron, Ohio racial tension building. Patrick, you mentioned a 4-year-old child murdered in Maryland for wetting her pants by her mother's black boyfriend. Interestingly enough, there is a...
Her mother's sister's black boyfriend.
Her mother's sister's?
Yeah. Okay.
At any rate, there is a Dr. Calfani Ture, T-U-R-E. He's an assistant professor at Mount St. Mary's University in Maryland. He is objectively, quote-unquote, investigating this shooting. He was a former police officer in Georgia, and he's, you know, looking at all the video. And all of this looks like this is from News 5 Cleveland, by the way, if you want to look this up, News 5 Cleveland. Former officer questions Akron officers training after viewing Jalen Walker shooting. So this is supposedly an objective and, you know, analytical mind who is an assistant professor. He's not even a real professor. He's saying that this whole thing is overkill.
Professors, basically just a younger professor who doesn't have tenure yet, or is maybe in some cases they do have tenure, but yeah, they're just younger. Assistant professor's fine.
So he could be a PhD. It's whatever. I mean, he's supposedly an objective, you know, analysis here. And he viewed all the videos, and he's calling for an investigation into the training of the officers. And this type of stuff, the point that I wanted to bring up by mentioning this article, this type of stuff, like, this guy has no, like, clout whatsoever in the investigation. This guy is an assistant professor in Maryland, right? And he's just going to the media and spewing all of his, you know, what he says is poor training and overkill on the part of the police officers. This is for media consumption. This is to drum up another George Floyd. Because at the core of it, you know, the investigation at Akron, whether these officers acted righteously or not, that's going to be determined by internal affairs, you know, in their own police department, you know, just like the George Floyd case was. But the George Floyd case had so much publicity and all of these protests and cities on fire that, you know, whatever investigating body was official, you know, deemed it necessary to come down on the police officers that apprehended George Floyd when he died in their custody by heart attack from meth and fentanyl. And they ended up getting the shaft. So I think this is an attempt, bringing this outside professor, so-called professor in, this is an attempt to drum up media, you know, against these officers and to make a George Floyd 2.0. What do you think of that analysis? Because, like, what other purpose? What other purpose would this guy's opinion have?
Well, I mean, it would have the purpose of, you know, getting him some references and recognition. You know, if he's an assistant professor, he might not have tenure, and he's trying to get tenure. He needs to publish, and you know, being quoted in the newspaper or on NPR, doesn't help you the way a publication in a peer-reviewed journal would. But still, it probably makes you know, it helps build the career. So for him, he might be thinking, oh, this is in my research, you know, I've been out of academia for so long, I forget some of these terms, but this is like my part of my research agenda, and I can get some name recognition out there.
Well, yeah, for the purpose of the media narrative, it's biasing the whole investigation. It's totally biasing it. And what it's caused was just last night, 4th of July, many protests in Akron. And Akron actually canceled their 4th of July celebrations over this whole thing. So, you know, already you've got the whole media bias coming down on this investigation. And I think that was the overall purpose of them, of Cleveland 5 publishing this opinion piece. That's really all it is an op-ed from this professor tour. That's my take on it. But we got a couple of callers if you want to go to callers. So let's do that. Kathleen in Texas. Kathleen, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Jeremy and Patrick. When Deanna Spingola was on RBN, she had a guest regularly who had written many books on this topic. And I believe his name, I know his last name, excuse me, is Flaherty. I believe his first name's Colin Flaherty.
Yeah.
And the only book title I can remember was White Girls Bleed a Lot. And And so I thought I would mention that to both of you. And then, Patrick, I never get to talk to you, so let me tell you these things very quickly. I do miss your guest, Mark Dankoff, very much, but I know that you can't have him for some reason. But my two favorite now are the Chinese American that you interview. I really like him, and then your guy with the music. So those are my two favorites now.
Hey,
and then hello. Hello?
What about Jeremy?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. But well, yeah, but I think of that as one show 2 days in a row. But anyway, the one thing about the last time you had Pastor Dankoff on, it was so funny because you were talking about some kind of, I forget what the topic was, but African American was mentioned, and so Pastor Dankoff said something about monkeying around, and there was a dramatic pause, and you just attacked him. It was hilarious. What do you mean monkeying around? Is that anyway? It was very funny. So anyway, I'll let you guys go. I just wanted to mention the those books, and I'm enjoying the back and forth with both of you. Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah. So yeah, Mark Dankoff. He's just got a lot of stuff going on. He's trying to do stuff when he can, but he's got a 100-year-old mom. He's got other things just going on. At any rate, the other book. So Colin Flaherty had White Girls Bleed a Lot. He had Don't Make the Black Kids Angry. I think that was an earlier book, and then he had a YouTube channel by the name of Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, but it kept getting taken down. I used to follow the YouTube channel, and I guess he's on Rumble now and probably still doing the same stuff. And in terms of like black crime, yeah, he is the authority.
And I tried to get Mark Dankoff on this Wednesday for spiritual health and wellness, and he's just too busy. He is involved with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. He has a lot of involvement there. Yep.
They recorded a show. So if you go to Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.com, I think is what it is, you'll see that he and Paul Stevenson and Mark Dankoff did a show that is being broadcast this week. They recorded it on Monday. I was supposed to be part of it too, and I was in a place where I had no reception and I couldn't join, unfortunately.
Well, we're getting the callers racked up. We also have an RBN host on hold. Let's bring on Stephen Douglas Whitener, and then I do want to go to our callers, and we'll bring on Paul in California next. Let's bring on Stephen. Stephen, if you can hang out with us, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, thanks, sir, Jeremy. You know, one thing, and I didn't hear every word y'all said because I called in during the break, but I hadn't heard either one of you mention the L word in this whole story. I mean, we have specific laws for dealing with that, you know. It's called lynching. But I guess it's not if you're a white guy that's killed by three blacks. If this had happened the other way around, all it would be is lynching in Akron. All across, they dredge all that back up. You know, it just, but yeah, that was kind of my thought that while I was listening to what you were saying. So I was enjoying listening to you, too. That was really the only thing I wanted to add and get your reaction to that.
That is an apt point. Always in any of these cases, reverse the roles of the races and you'll see the hypocrisy. Patrick.
Yeah. I mean, I guess lynching has a legal sense that differs somewhat from its colloquial sense. And the legal sense, I think lynching is when you remove a person from legal custody. Right, something like that, as opposed to simply mob justice. But it's usually colloquially used in the term to mean something like mob justice or mob punishment.
I think most of the laws that I've heard about are more along the lines of mob justice than to remove the person from legal custody and then. But you know, because they've charged people with lynching just that who had done vigilante justice that to someone who wasn't in custody. I have seen those reports. I'm not an authority on exactly what the law says, though.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, do you want to hold on and sure. hang out with us and field calls? We got Paul in California coming up next.
Yeah, I'd like
to. Yeah, hang on, Stephen and Paul. Hulk, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How are you? How you doing tonight? Stephen, I'll probably be seeing you tomorrow with Richard.
Yeah, you know, looking forward to this.
This is the kind of topic, it's unfortunate that it doesn't get the sort of discussion with both groups or both races involved. I'm not sure who started the whole televised town hall meeting thing. I remember back in the day, Ted Koppel and Nightline did a few town hall meetings. You know, unfortunately today, it would probably not be covered honestly, but, you know, the honest debate does need to occur. I do also have black friends and acquaintances, and a couple of them are more open than others. You know, one, there's just no way you can talk to him about this. He just won't see it, okay? It's always racism. It's always unfair, right? And the other guy is probably more in line with the way we would look at it. But again, you know, he's coming at it from the overall, should we say, you know, he grew up in the South and he moved out here to California. And, you know, he knows what racism is and he knows there isn't a whole lot out here. And he knows the crime statistics that I've given him before. But to tell the average black person they do not have to fear white criminals, it's a tall task. And this is a kind of behavior that, you know, to be honest, without Colin Flaherty, I'm not sure I would have really known of it. That was a great YouTube channel that he had, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, and I probably had at least 25 or 30 of his videos under my belt before it went off the air. And by the way, I don't know if you knew Patrick or not, but he's deceased. You made a comment about he's probably still doing the same thing on Rumble, but he's been gone for a couple of years now. But yeah, you know, the behavior that you can see that we can all see on YouTube is almost exclusively black behavior. Earlier in the broadcast, Jeremy, you made a point about the sooner or later the humanity would take over. If you're in a position to dominate or to win the fight, there's going to be a point where nobody needs to tell you not to do more damage or to go further. I myself, in my little short-lived career of altercations, you know, had put people down multiple times, and I never had the impulse or the urge to hit them or to strike them again. And in most cases, I'm thinking like one actually was not that long ago where I just pushed somebody down. That's all I needed to do was push them down, put them on their butt. And then, you know, as they got up slowly, I just let them know, okay, it's over now if you want it to be over, but let's not go any further, you know, because, I mean, I was ready to swing, but I didn't. And it's just because, I don't know, it's part of us. You know, you could say, well, we're raised right, but, you know, I was never taught, you know, don't do this or don't do that. You watch old Western movies, and what's the prohibition in Western movies, right? Don't shoot a man in the back, and don't kick a man when he's down.
Right.
So that's a good thing, and I think that should be almost, in many ways, taught to school children. But when you're dealing with blacks, so let's face it, I listen to the Fast the Nation broadcast, which I'm really enjoying those guys. I just recently have discovered them, and they're on Speak Free Radio now. I don't know why I didn't know about them earlier, but they're my, I won't say they're my type of people, but it's my type of thinking, you know, the way that they cover things. And what they brought out was that he was, Nathan Lyman was the only white kid there. He had two black friends with him. So they either couldn't protect him or they didn't protect him. And, of course, of all the blacks involved, you know, none of them were seriously hurt. It was only Nathan Lyman. And, again, it's just anybody can see this behavior on YouTube. And you don't hardly ever, I don't recall seeing white people stomping out others or stomping out blacks. I've never seen that. But I've seen blacks stomping out each other, and I've seen blacks stomping out whites and stomping out other races. It's just one of those things. It's certainly innate, and it's also probably cultural. One of the reasons they're probably quick to act violently is they're raised in violent circumstances, and they need to fight other blacks. I read a book on this a long time ago called Don't Make Me Holler, I believe, is the title of it. Or no, Makes Me Want to Holler. That was the title of it. Some black guy who made a, something of his life and became like a journalist and an author. And he talked about, on a radio show, I went out, after I heard it, I bought the book, and he talked about growing up in a black community and how often he had to fight and, you know, all the stuff that was going on. And my black friends have basically told me the same thing, that they love living around whites because they don't have to worry. I mean, this is out of black people's mouths that I know. And one guy told me, he said, as soon as I could get out, I wanted to raise my family in a white area because I didn't want my kids to go through the hell I did. So it's a problem, and it needs to be out front, talked about, open, on the table. And the last thing I'll say real quickly is, according to the guys on Fast the Nation, the Akron police chief took a knee to Black Lives Matter back in 2020. So that was a beef they had with him, too.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, group behavior and action reaction, you know, as not, maybe not recently, but, you know, 100 years ago, when you had a severe injustice in the community, you had whites come together and, you know, enact justice. And I'll bring case in point, the 1913 lynching of Leo Frank, you know, the Jewish business owner that brutally raped and murdered that teenage girl, and he was going to get off. And the white community came together and enacted justice in the form of a lynching. That's the type of group behavior you usually see in white communities, at least the older ones from ages gone past. And I think that type of group behavior sort of put in place checks and balances, you know,
it's needed. I would put forth the, shall we say, the hypothesis that that sort of thing is needed with a vast majority of these blacks. I don't think they understand, other than that, I don't think they understand the concepts of fairness or law or justice. They have to be, in my opinion, they have to be ruled and ruled properly. I think Albert Schweitzer, we're all probably familiar with what Albert Schweitzer wrote about. And we just cannot be in a situation where there are, quote, equals, or that we regard them as such, because that is a mistake, and you can see what's happening not in just this country but other countries when that occurs. I don't think we need to mistreat them, but we need to rule, we need to be in charge, and it's going to be disastrous if we don't.
Stephen, do you have some comment?
What you say rings true, Paul. Next door to me, I have a black family. A black family living, and they're very good neighbors. You know, other than that, it's mostly a white, or these townhouses are probably mixed. I haven't noticed. I mean, I've noticed some accents, but anyway, that's other than that. Yeah, they've done just exactly what you described. Moved out to raise their family among white people, and they're very, very good neighbors. So I think that's, you know, universal, in at least around here, you know, probably other places too. But I don't know what we're going to do about this. It's going to get worse. They're just pushing the division, trying to get more and more retribution back and forth between people. I saw that they had some lefty types had tried to bomb this former Confederate monument in Asheville. I just noticed that before I started listening to you guys. I that's not exactly right on the topic, but you know, it's just more of this trying to push violence between us. You know, this and also I wanted to mention that 60 rounds in that guy. I mean, that does seem kind of like everybody was jumping in, and they just don't train anymore. It's just they're turning the cops into this paramilitary woke enforcement force with the worst candidates they can get. It seems like who would do that job? You know, I have to stop and think about that today. Who was doing that job? Now, most cops that actually cared about being cops gave up when they wanted to defund the police and all that and walk away. And people just were, yeah, the county sheriff, maybe that's about the best you can hope for around here too.
All right. Well, we've got another caller. Thanks a lot, Paul. Appreciate your commentary always.
Thank you.
So let's go to Anthony from Tucson. I'm just kidding. Yes. I know it's Tucson, Arizona. Tucson, Arizona, Anthony.
Thank you for having me on your show. It's Tucson. It refers to the Indians' belief that there were two suns, and that's where we got the name, the moon and the sun appeared at a certain time as being two suns.
Fascinating.
I know what I have to say would probably take a long time, and to hear the horror story of my life and living in a white neighborhood in Cleveland, Ohio, that was overcome by the slumlords to create what I viewed as a method by which they could make money two ways. First, they would move these families into these white neighborhoods so that the people that knew that their culture was not our way we were trained as humans, as Christians, and that they were very obviously violent between one another, as well as they were towards the white people. My experience was our home was raided by them over a dog who the ball went into the yard, and because they couldn't get it fast enough, they jumped over the fence to get it. But then as a boy growing up, and I was probably in a third grade at the John Burrell elementary school or whatever they called it back then, these band of blacks actually made bow and arrows out of what they call a stinkweed tree, and they were shooting them at me, and in order for me to get away, I crossed the street, and when I went to go back again, I got hit by a car. So I had one experience with my family at our home, and then the other one is just that they've been given a bad attitude, a wrong attitude about Black Life Matters, but they forget about the, I think it was 31,000 whites died supposedly to free the blacks from them, and they never are made to understand that as bad as they had this here in this country, they had a roof over their head, they were fed, maybe some of them were mistreated, maybe they needed to be mistreated, I don't know. But I do know that there were white slaves along with black slaves, and Abraham Lincoln did not do right by freeing them. He was supposed to have bought them back, because those people, right or wrong, who thought they had the right to own a person, did have a bill of sale to them. So therefore, they were property. And our Constitution flatly forbids taking private property without compensation. So when Jefferson Davis was tricked into by Judah Benjamin to attack Pearl Harbor, that gave this bearded mass murderer Roosevelt Abraham Lincoln the excuse to declare war on the South, which they had every right to own slaves. So the only way that the government could have done was to pass the law to buy them back and then return them from where they were taken from, because a nation is a race of people. It is not a myth. This is the Zionist Jewish lobby that forces this mentality and the people. They brought them here, they sold them, they made the profits.
Yeah, thanks for your comments, Anthony. Yeah, all very good observations. We'll be back tomorrow with the second part of Pax for Jeremy on National B-Boy Radio.
You know that nothing beats a storable food stockpile for readiness, but there are two problems with storable food. It's expensive, and eventually it runs out. Then what? What happens to you or your family when there's not enough food to go around? In a true survival scenario, you need a renewable food source. That's why Seed Armory has developed a survival-grade seed vault that can produce over $25,000 worth of crops from just one kit. Unlike other seed vaults, we don't inflate our seed counts with fillers. All our seeds are 100% heirloom and non-GMO. Not a green thumb? Don't worry. We've written an easy-to-follow guide to guarantee your success from planting to harvest. For a limited time, we're offering an additional 10% off your order when you enter the code RBN at checkout. Go to seedarmory.com. That's seedarmory.com. Don't wait. Like everything else, seeds are in short supply.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.